Of course, yeah. So number one is that data, so that customer insights report. Number two is the strategy. So we call it our strategic roadmap. So we take the data, put it into a strategy that's executable. Number three is really kind of a combination of creative and branding, because that's when we're going to extract from the strategy and the creative. What does the messaging need to look like? What is the branding? What does the creative need to look like? And then what we always do as an agency is we do testing. So we do multivariate testing of those concepts, of those messagings, of those, you know, creative platforms. And we really figure out what's going to get the best ROI for the business. And step five is the fun part. It's the launch, right? So that's when we go all in, because we've taken a lot of the risk associated with that campaign out. And so now we know it's going to work because we've done small scale tests towards that. And we just run with it.
Welcome to the B2B Digital Marketer Podcast, a podcast helping you to end your struggle with digital marketing, helping you to pave a new and better path to target and capture your ideal customer. Each week, we teach you how insiders and experts debunk the dreary and become engines of innovation. Now, here's your host, Jim Rembach.
Okay, B2B DM gang, we're going to have a really good discussion today, because it's going to talk a little bit about strategy, tactics, and then being able to execute, which is most important where people fall short. And our overriding discussion is we're going to be talking about how to master B2B marketing certainty in five easy steps. For many of us, the fear of the unknown stops us from doing some of the things that we need to do. And then also we go down a particular path, and then we are trying to find the things that are preventing us from actually executing. And so here to help us with all that is going to be Brandon McKee. Brandon, welcome.
Jim, thanks for having me. I'm excited.
Now, before we actually get into our discussion, if you could share a little bit with the B2B DM gang about your background and experience.
Of course. Well, currently I'm the CEO of WinBig Media. I have a unique transition into marketing because I actually used to own and operate health clubs. And so I used to be the guy sitting in the seat wondering how to market my business more effectively. And now I'm the guy helping business owners market their businesses. So that's kind of the background. And then, you know, I met my partner, Philip Stutz. We've written a book about our undefeated marketing system and those five steps you mentioned earlier. So really just excited to share that with as many business owners as possible.
Well, and I think it's important to note a couple things. First of all, you know, you talk about your background, which is really a little bit more B2C, right? I have consumers that are coming into the health club area, but now you're actually in the B2B world. And right. So when you start thinking about actually your clientele and who you're serving, you know, I think talking about the difference between the B2B and B2C is important, and also to some of the changes that have occurred in regards to that. And then we can kind of, you know, roll into those five steps and, you know, how we can make that certainty something that's a little bit more executable.
Of course. Yeah. No. So for us, I mean, some of the changes we've noticed, and one thing I'll mention too, just to start us off, Jim, is that, you know, my agency, we have a partnership with one of the largest data collections agencies in the country. And so at any point in time, we're tracking around 230 million American consumers. And with that data, we have access to businesses as well. So we're talking 18, 20 million different businesses, and all the data that we can extract in terms of psychological drivers, what drives people to make decisions, transactional data. And so what we do as a firm is take that information and then execute upon it in our creative messaging, our branding. And so what we've seen a lot, and, you know, obviously the pandemic happened and, you know, things changed drastically for how businesses operate, is that there's been a change in consumers, and that change in consumers is actually moved into B2B as well. You know, how people are having conversations, how people are budgeting for, you know, items, how people are transacting, and what they need to see in your advertising and your messaging, even in your sales pitch, to actually do a deal with you. So lots of interesting stuff as the years have gone by with the pandemic and moving into today.
Well, and I think that's why it's so important to talk about that whole certainty component, because I would dare to say that particular factor, it, you know, has kind of shifted, you know, as far who do I want to do business with, as well as when we start looking at reducing the amount of error that has to be, or that we could potentially make in regards to the things that you were talking about, you know, our messaging, you know, how we're engaging. And if I start, you know, thinking about that, I would dare to say in the B2B world where the decisions are much higher risk. I mean, for somebody to actually choose another business, it's mostly not their money, right?
Right.
And so there's other things that come into play from that fear factor perspective, right? I don't want to ruin my reputation. I don't want to lose my job. I don't want to, you know, hurt the company so bad that it impacts the livelihood of the people that are working here. I mean, all of these different factors make the decisions more difficult.
Yeah.
The certainty piece, you know, has also created such a greater level of risk than it ever has before. So if you could kind of walk us through those five steps, and then we can go and dig deeper a little bit into each one.
Absolutely. So step one is really the data side of our business. So that's what we call a customer insights report. And for any business that we engage with, we run one of these on their current customers, on their potential customers. And what that's doing is it's taking that database I mentioned earlier, Jim, and those 230 million American consumers, all those businesses that we're tracking. And basically, we're doing a full-blown analysis on their first-party data. So if a business comes to us and says, here's all the data of my current customers, I need to know more about them so that I can sell them ancillary services or find more people that look like them, we'll run a data report on that. It's about 55 to 75 pages. And what you get in that data report, a lot of folks go, you know, demographics, I get that, income, whatever it is, right? We're really getting granular. We're getting into like the psychological drivers, people's values. So you mentioned earlier certainty, which is interesting because that pops up very highly in a lot of the B2B customer insights reports that we're running. Because you're right, people want to understand, okay, I'm making this investment. How do I know it's going to impact either the business that I represent or my business and keep me safe, right? The other one we see tremendously is trust. And so people want to do business with other people that they trust, right? You're ultimately, in a lot of cases, making someone look good, right? Whether you're a director of marketing, hiring a marketing firm to, you know, help you guys out. Their job is to make you as the director of marketing look good. And so that's really what needs to be in the sales pitch. That needs to be what's in the branding and the messaging. So if I'm that marketing agency and I'm running advertisements to try to get more clients, all that has to be in my messaging. It doesn't matter about your value proposition in some cases or the fancy technology that you're using. It's really about trust in a lot of ways. And so that's how we take that data and really help businesses thrive from it. You'd be surprised how many people we engage with that they're, I call it the fluff, right? They're advertising all the technology behind their product and the, you know, the fancy schmancy, you know, process. And really what we're trying to push is ultimately the trust, the certainty, the psychological values that we know are going to impact that audience.
So, okay. To me, we're talking about, you know, getting inside our buyer's brain in a much deeper way than we've ever had before, using data sets that are outside of our own. And arguably, you could say that a lot of the first party data, you know, has some issues with it as well for a lot of organizations, because a lot of the shifts that have occurred, people who were, you know, my customer may no longer be, and I inherited somebody else. I mean, there's all these different nuances that have taken place. And so, I would even say that particular data that you're talking about, you know, querying and analyzing, mm-hmm. you can't just do it once. I mean, I would dare to say that you have to actually incorporate that into some type of, you know, continuous iteration.
Oh, 100%. I would, and it kind of goes into step two, if I might, Jim, is that it's really a data-driven strategy is what we talk about with our clients, right? So you're totally right. You can run this customer insights report in January, feel really great about it, and everything can change on you come April, May. Because consumers and businesses and the way they're making decisions are constantly changing. We saw earlier this year, and now it's starting to ease up a little bit. People put the clamp down on their budgets. You know, there was a lot of talk on the news and there was all this thoughts about recession. And, you know, frankly, from my perspective, we might have already been in one, but there was a lot of talk about it. It was just being blown up across every platform. And so what we saw in our data, because we're tracking that data constantly, is that businesses started to clamp down on budgets. people probably started to feel that, you know, we were making decisions slower. And now we're starting to feel that ease off a little bit. People are getting a little bit more interested. The summer's kind of come and gone almost, you know, people are coming off vacation. They're ready to, you know, go right into it. So yeah, it's a data-driven strategy at the end of the day. You have to constantly be looking at the data. And to your point, yeah, first party data is great, but I always say, bad data is still bad data, right? So what we try to do as an agency is incorporate that third-party data. So for an example, if you were a marketing agency coming to me and you were trying to reach businesses with your platform, what I would say is, you know, we really need to take a strategy that's, let's try to reach your current customer for sure, but let's take a look at the customers that are your dream customers. Maybe they, you know, make X amount in revenue. Maybe they are in this vertical or this industry. And we're going to create a segment that helps you target them, because one of those might be five of your current customers, right? And so that's really where we come in and help, you know, businesses reach that ideal customer or that ideal company to work with.
Okay. So you if you can, just kind of hit those five steps, because I mean, we kind of jump from one and then into two.
Yeah.
Lay them out for us as a whole.
Of course. Yeah. So number one is that data. So that customer insights report. Number two is the strategy. So we call it our strategic roadmap. So we take the data, put it into a strategy that's executable. Number three is really kind of a combination of creative and branding, because that's when we're going to extract from the strategy and the creative. What does the messaging need to look like? What is the branding? What does the creative need to look like? And then what we always do as an agency is we do testing. So we do multivariate testing of those concepts, of those messagings, of those, you know, creative platforms. And we really figure out what's going to get the best ROI for the business. And step five is the fun part. It's the launch, right? So that's when we go all in, because we've taken a lot of the risk associated with that campaign out. And so now we know it's going to work because we've done small scale tests towards that. And we just run with it.
Now, you mentioned the word campaign. And I think it's really important for us to put some clarity around that, because campaign for many people could mean, you know, a short duration sprint, or if you want to call it, you know, a timeline that's associated sure. with it. So if you could give us an understanding of what you mean by campaign.
Yeah. So a campaign can be anything between let's call it a 30-day flight to really hit a specific group of consumers or businesses. It can also be a strategy that goes 12 months long, right? And so what we try to do in our advertising process with any of the businesses we're working with is really look at a long-term picture, you know, 12 to 18 months. I always say this to businesses that we work with, but you certainly don't want to jump in, run a campaign for 14 days, whether it's on any platform, frankly, even radio or traditional methods, and abandon it after 14 days, after you put all that work to get ready for it, because you really don't have the data to understand how it's actually performing. A lot of people forget there's algorithms that kick in. There's all sorts of things that after 30, 60 days continue to feed that campaign and get better and better results. So it varies to answer your question, Jim, but I mean, really what we're trying to do is a long-term strategy for growth for every client that we work with. So it's never a 30 days and then we're out.
Okay. So you kind of hit on a couple of things there. You talked about ads, you talked about platforms. Give us an understanding when we start talking about that is, you know, what is the ecosystem of this?
Yeah. So there's a lot of different ways you can market, of course. And I think a lot of businesses have a hard time figuring out, you know, where they need to be, what they need to be doing. And so that's really where that data report that I mentioned, the customer insights report, comes in handy, because what we're able to do is go, okay, most of your customers or most of the businesses you're trying to reach are not on this platform. They're actually here. Or maybe instead of any form of digital marketing, we say, you know what, actually direct mail is going to be the best for you specifically. And so that's how we really understand where we need to be. And then as an agency, we've got, you know, multiple different teams within us to either employ a digital strategy, employ a traditional strategy, or what we do a lot of times is an omni-channel strategy, right? So that means maybe we're utilizing some form of traditional marketing media, and we're also utilizing, you know, the digital interface. So that could be Meta, Google, Facebook, Instagram, Pinterest, just to give you guys some examples. But yeah, I mean, there's a ton of different variations you can go with.
So for me, I'm starting to think about really what a lot of organizations do is they just dabble in certain things for a short period of time. And like you're saying, they abandon it because it wasn't working. Well, that does not lead to the whole certainty component for the company, nor does it lead, you know, to the certainty, you know, for your potential customer. And maybe even you can say your existing customers, you know, now they start questioning whether or not they want to continue to do business with you, because that's an important element as well as the whole retention, right? Referral components and all of that. So if I was to say, with all of the changes that have happened in a lot of these different platforms, you know, have you seen, you know, a shift in opportunity that people just don't see right in front of them? And I don't want to bait you. I've heard one thing that essentially was old and is now new again, but maybe you have greater data reflected insights in that.
Yeah, I think one thing we're noticing, and it's a little bit different for everyone, Jim, just based on the data. So I do want to say that as one caveat here. But in general, what we see is traditional media is coming back slightly, actually. So if you had talked to us, you know, 2 years ago, everyone was hyper focused on digital strategies. There was almost nobody doing any sort of traditional media. And what we're seeing is that saturation has to be happening right now. So the one thing I can tell you from our global data that we're tracking is that people are abandoning brands, which is really interesting to see. Is that what I mean by that is that someone might be, you know, going with a brand or doing business with a company for 5 or 10 years, and all of a sudden they're starting to abandon that relationship for maybe a more cost-effective relationship, or a relationship that makes them feel like they have that more trust, they're getting better results, right? So people are shopping, they're looking around. And because of that, brand awareness is becoming huge again. And so what I mean by brand awareness, and this is kind of I like to say a taboo word in the marketing industry, is that, you know, a lot of people don't like brand awareness because maybe there's not a direct correlation or a direct ROI associated with a lot of times. But when you look at the big companies, the Fortune 500, the Fortune 200 companies, they are shoveling a ton of money into making sure that maybe that customer or maybe that business doesn't need them now, but in 6 months, when they think they need that service, they're calling you, right? And so in general, I see a lot of that, a saturation of the market, not really on lead generation campaigns. So not like PPC or Performance Max, which, you know, Google just rolled out almost a year ago now, which is it's doing a great job providing leads to businesses, but that doesn't saturate your market. And so I would say that if I could give anyone any advice right now, it's do not ignore the need for brand awareness and saturating your market so that your customers and those businesses that you want to work with know about you and they hear about you constantly.
Well, as you're saying that, I mean, it almost seems like a couple things. First of all, you talk about, you know, multi-pronged, multifaceted and all of that is in a lot of instances, especially when you start talking about certain markets, even in B2B, the amount of new entrants, you know, is significant. And a lot of those don't have any type of brand awareness, but yet they're still getting customers, you know, and so, you know, hey, yes, I need to be working on building some of that brand awareness. However, that's not necessarily going to grow my business and meet some of my, you know, more near term requirements from a sales and revenue perspective. So, you know, how do I approach that?
I would say, you know, for us, it's always based on being really, really targeted. So what I like to use, the analogy I like to use is, you know, instead of taking the shotgun approach, take the sniper approach, right? And so there are, to your point, a lot of businesses that cannot afford to spread out their budgets and really cast what I would call this really wide net of marketing and capture that brand awareness, right? And that's okay. What we've gotten really good at in utilizing these customer insights report is going, okay, we know that there's 16 different platforms we can be on right now, but our customer is on this one and this one in terms of the index of how many of those customers are on there. So you take a pie, right? And we find out that 80% of a business's customers or those businesses they're targeting are on Meta, for example. I'm just going to use that as a general example. And that's where we put the marketing budget, because we know there's going to be the best ROI. We're going to get the best cost per acquisition. We really kind of reverse engineer things from a numbers perspective. I call it the Moneyball approach. So how do we make sure that they're high quality leads, that we're getting the most out of our marketing dollars in a time where maybe those marketing dollars are very scarce or precious, right? So that's really what I would say is, you know, taking that stance. And then to touch on brand awareness one more time is that I think a lot of people believe that brand awareness has got to be this really expensive, gigantic campaign. And there's a lot of ways to do that for free. A good example with a lot of the businesses we work with, our firm typically works with a lot of, home service, financial services firms as well. And what we see is really just tackling those reviews and making sure that the businesses you're working with are giving you great service reviews. And you can do that very easily through a direct email campaign, and it costs you little to nothing. So those are some good tips and tricks we found to keep the costs low, but really pump the brand up, make sure people are talking about you.
Okay. So if I start, talking about that whole budgeting perspective, you mentioned about when budgets are tight, it seems to me they're always tight, right?
Yeah.
Oftentimes things get allocated and people don't necessarily look at doing something a little bit different because I already have this allocated over here and I can't do that. And I have to do this, and obviously you're saying the whole data driven approach is really the one that's going to add to that, certainty element. If I'm sitting here and I haven't, engaged, with an organization, like yours, that's doing that, how can I at least get started so I can start proving some points internally to say, hey, yes, we've allocated, to this particular area. However, from a ROI perspective, it doesn't appear like it's going to give us the greatest opportunity, for us to generate revenue from it. How do they start that, way of thinking?
Well, one thing I would say is if you aren't engaged with, an agency or kind of looking at that data side of things, the best way to tackle it is not to do too many things at once. And so, we've been guilty of that as an agency before a while back. And this was just internally, right? We're trying to do too many things at once. We have all these ideas and we're so excited about all of them that we spread our resources too thin. So if I'm a business owner and, budget, like you said, there's always a budget and a lot of times it's tight, especially recently. You put that into an area that for example, PPC is a good area, Google PPC or so pay-per-lead searches, that's a good area to know that people are searching for that. People are searching for your services. People are searching for your SaaS, services, whatever it is that you're selling to those businesses, that someone's avidly reaching out for that. And so that's a great area to start, I would say. It's a pretty sophisticated system. There's so much AI that's involved in that now that it really is one of those things where you can very sophisticatedly set it up and then kind of leave it. And that's really useful for a business that may not have a big marketing team to come in and help utilize that service. The other thing is, again, not to make sure you have 16 different things going on, right? And you're spreading your budget too thin and nothing has enough budget to actually make a dent. What I like to say with any business, this depending on vertical, obviously this changes a little bit, but no matter what you're doing, you should typically be spending between 5% and 10% of total revenue towards marketing. And if you're way on the low end of that, maybe even under 5%, 2% to 3%, and you're spreading that budget extremely thin, you're really not getting anything out of any of those platforms. So making sure that you're putting your dollars into one area strategically is really important.
Well, one of the things that I had the opportunity to review was a research report in regarding to that percent of spend and how much is allocated into the marketing and sales activities for a particular organization. And some of these organizations, especially in the tech sector, they're spending as much as 60 to 70%, of their revenues, into the sales and marketing, activities. I would dare to say that's absolutely a very intentional strategic approach for an organization to do that. And then the consequences that go along with that.
Sure.
And you talk about a minimum side, if 5%. And if I'm down there, that's a problem. Where's kind of a sweet spot for organizations to be able to think, okay, I'm spending this percent of all revenue on marketing and selling activities?
Yeah. Well, it's the first question I ask business owners that come into our pipeline, Jim. And I would say this is that if you're trying to grow, which I don't know too many people out there that say, I don't want to grow at all. I'm just happy where I am, right? So if you're a business that's trying to grow year over year, that really healthy spot, in my personal opinion, from what I've seen, is around 15 to 18%. And that is going to depend on your business and your margins, of course. You know, you mentioned some of those tech companies, and this goes for, you know, direct to consumer companies as well, like e-commerce. They spend a lot more than that. And a lot of it is because if they stop spending money, the revenue goes way down. But B2B services like we're talking about don't always have that same problem. So I really think 15 to 18%. And that's aggressive, by the way, if you want to grow, is a really good starting point. Now, sometimes there's reason to say we should go a little above that, or maybe a little under. You know, I'm a big believer of ad efficiency. So when someone comes to me, and I'll just use some made up numbers here, if you're spending $10,000 a month, right, towards your marketing right now, and you say, you know, hey, I'm trying to grow, the first thing I'm going to do and from my perspective is look at that $10,000 and make sure it's going into the right places. Because we may not have to say, oh, you need to be spending 2 or 3 more percent of your revenue towards marketing. We may just go, if we just take a piece of this pie and move it over here, we're actually going to get a 15% better ROI on the current marketing budget you have. So, but that's what I would say.
Okay. One of the things I also often see as a common mistake is situations where certain things just take a little bit longer to nurture, but yet we expect it to have an immediate impact. So if I start thinking about the strategy and I start thinking about, you know, multi-presence and all of that, what can I realistically expect in regards to, you know, my investments? I mean, you know, what is typically going to give me some short-term, you know, impacts? And I can say that, you know, I need to really be thinking short-term here, where this is going to be a little bit more of a, you know, longer-term payback.
Yeah, it depends, I think, on the form of marketing that you're doing. But first and foremost, in like a lead generation game or anything like that, you definitely need to give a tactic, a strategy, a campaign, whatever it is, at least 30 to 45 days to really decide, you know, hey, this is working, or I need to tweak this. The biggest mistake I see is people giving something a week or two, going in, changing a bunch of stuff against, you know, the advisement of maybe their agency, or even, you know, maybe they picked those, you know, specific targets, and now they're changing everything. And that just does not give these platforms enough time to kind of learn. I mean, these are machines that are learning constantly through the algorithm, right? And then they're serving your content to the right folks. And so what I would say is at least 30 to 45 days. But when we talk about big brand awareness campaigns, that stuff is, you know, 6 months to 12 months sometimes, right? Because what you're doing, you're not really trying to get a customer tomorrow. You're trying to get a customer in 6 months by them going, oh, I need this. And now I'm going straight to gym because I've seen ads over the last 6 months, right? So it really just depends, but definitely not lower than 30 days for sure.
I think you bring a really important point, even from an individual perspective. Like, for example, LinkedIn, of course, is massive in B2B. And I, you know, have tried, you know, to convey to people that it is an algorithm. And even when you start talking about, for example, your first line connections, you know, who you connect with and who you accept, you know, connection requests from is telling LinkedIn, you know, who to continue to present you to. So, yeah. Hey, if you've connected with this person, you may also want to look at these other profiles as well. And if you're connecting openly, and because people talk about, hey, I'm an open networker. But I mean, if you're connecting with people that aren't part of your, just say your ecosystem from a marketing and selling perspective, you're not doing yourself any favors.
Right. You know, what's funny about that too, Jim, is that we see and we do LinkedIn advertising in a similar fashion. And what we find is really it's like month 3-4 when you really start to like get a lot of responses, get those conversations going, get that saturation happening. That's not to say you shouldn't see anything in the first 30 to 60 days when you're doing those types of campaigns. But It's really more on, you know, I'd say 90 to 120 days when we start seeing that thing really start to click. And so, yeah, I mean, it is an algorithm, and it's coupled with, you know, who's managing it, the types of, you know, content you're feeding it, right? So I always like to say too, is combining some form of AI into that process is really important, because what the system knows is it knows what those people want to hear. And so if you're utilizing some form of AI to help you with that content creation, using the data that I was talking about earlier to help inform what that messaging needs to look like, you could click your response rate up 20, 30% just by doing that.
Okay. So I think that's also one of those black box areas when you start talking about AI, artificial intelligence, in regards to marketing and messaging and things like that, because I was chatting with somebody not too long ago that said for a particular, you know, target that they were going after, they were creating 10 AI generated blog posts a day for that.
Yeah.
What's the risk at doing something like that?
I think time, but even time now, I mean, AI is pretty quick. So you're getting a lot of results very quickly. You know, there's some cost to it as well, Jim. And what's interesting is I'm hosting a event at LeadsCon, which is a lead generation, you know, event. And that's actually the panel that we're talking about is, you know, the new AI lead generating kind of concepts and technologies out there. I think the big risk that I see with a lot of these, and this gets past the messaging component of AI, it gets into like the auto dialers and a person actually having a conversation with a robot. You know, I don't know if you've seen the big Tesla call that was out there recently, but it's basically someone talking to a robot about a Tesla. And it does well in that conversation. I think you lose a little bit of the humanity and some of those key indicators for your customers. You lose a little bit. So, you know, for example, in the conversation, he was talking a little bit about his existing vehicle and how much he loved it, right? And then the robot was like, yeah, just kind of skipped over that and was going right back to the Tesla and how awesome it was. So it misses, I think the word I'm looking for is empathy, right? It kind of misses that empathy in that sales conversation. But I do think from a standpoint of, you know, creating content, creating blogs, writing, as long as a human is looking at that and making a few tweaks here and there, it's an incredibly valuable tool. I mean, we use it at my agency constantly with ad copy to, you know, we score our ad copy through AI. So it helps us understand what the consumer is going to want to see. We give it, I'll give you an example. We'll take a creative concept and we'll put it in our AI platform and it'll spit out 160 different versions of that same ad. And then we test those components against each other. So I think if you use it right, it can be incredibly valuable. But I think to just put all your chips into it and sign off for the day isn't the way to go.
Well, one of the things that I heard is that a lot of the, you know, search engines, Google, are starting to put in detectors. And, you know, are looking at, and some are beginning to penalize, you know, certain, you know, blogs and e-com sites and affiliate type sites, for example, in regards to whatever they're going to index, because we have to look at this partly from this perspective as well, is that it cost Google money to crawl. Yeah. Every single web page, every single post, every single ad, but I mean, it goes on and on and on. Everything that they crawl is costing them money. So if they're saying this is machine generated, you know, therefore don't crawl that. And so that they're going to be starting to actually do that. And so there's some people who do a lot of tests in that particular area and mm-hmm. have certain things that they've been able to rank in the short term that ultimately were deranked or, you know, lost ranking. You know, because of that, it was, you know, completely AI generated.
Yeah. Well, we'll see a lot of that. I think we'll be talking about it at this conference coming up at LeadsCon, but I mean, there's a lot of fake leads out there. There's a lot of fake data. And it's, you know, these farms that produce leads at mass, and they're really not even in the general area you're looking for. Right. So, there's going to be, I think AI is a very interesting and very, very helpful tool, but there is going to be a lot of fraud and, you know, issues that come of it. Right. So we're kind of preparing for that, I think, as a society now.
Well, and that's one of the things that I've always heard about the uncertainty associated with paid ads is that, you know, a bot is hitting my ad and driving up my revenue costs.
Yeah.
Prevent that from happening.
Right. And in some cases, you can't even pick anymore where the, you know, consumer goes when it sees an ad. I mean, Performance Max is a great tool that I would, you know, certainly recommend to a lot of business owners, especially owners that aren't, you know, utilizing an agency for targeting purposes. And what it does, though, it's a drip campaign, and you plug in a couple different variables and Google picks the messaging, picks the visual, it picks where that customer is actually going to go. So you can't say, I want it to go to this landing page. It picks that based on your website. So it could send it to your About Us page, or it could send you to, you know, the straight to the pricing page, just depending on what that consumer has been looking at, viewing, consuming. So it's taken a lot of the choice away from us, which I've seen it go really, really well in a campaign. I've also seen those campaigns that perform really poorly. So it's really about, again, not letting the robot manage us, I think.
Okay. And I think we've kind of hit on something that I want to flip a little bit. We've been talking about how do I get, you know, certainty, you know, in my B2B marketing. You know, what are some of the things that you've seen people have this perceived certainty in? And it's like, no, you need to be a little bit more uncertain about that.
That's a good question. You know, I think a lot of on the digital side specifically, because I talked a little bit about traditional methods earlier and some of the brand awareness. I think, you know, what we're doing and throwing all of our chips in, you know, let's say Performance Max is a great example here, or like even just general PPC. A lot of times I find when we dig into a new client's, you know, data, Google Analytics, they're actually competing with themselves in a lot of ways because they're not properly maintaining those campaigns through negative keywords, through positive keywords. And so I'd say be careful on that end for anyone listening. It's really more about, you know, being granular in that targeting criteria, whether you're doing Performance Max or a Google PPC campaign, because everyone's doing that, but are you paying attention to it? You know, what you can't do with those types of campaigns is put them on autopilot and just not look at them for 30 days, right? I'm not saying going in and pulling the plug, because we talked about how bad that can be, but it's really about putting some attention to detail and making sure, again, you're not letting the machine drive you, you're driving it. So that'd be my first inclination based on that question. And then a lot of it is really, I'll flip it now and go to messaging and creative. You know, one of the things, 9 times out of 10, when we work with businesses of any kind, whether we're working with a founder or a CEO or the marketing team, there's preconceived understanding, or they think of understanding of what the consumer that they're marketing to needs to see, right? And that could be farther from the truth. You know, we've done hundreds of these customer insights reports, and it's so funny to see, you know, we thought the customer cared about this, and in fact, that actually turns them off. You know, a great story I have about that is we've had the pleasure of working with NASCAR a couple of times, and this isn't exactly the B2B example, but it's a good example of this creative concept, right? Where we're talking about going to a race, and the way we're marketing it is based on how good of a time it's going to be. And, you know, my bringing my buddies and the beer and all the fun associated with it, when really the target customer that wanted to go was a female in between 35 and 45. And she wanted to bring her family because it was after COVID and it was a safe environment, a clean environment she was looking for. So we were marketing completely wrong. And it was all based on that gut, that like intuition, right? So I firmly believe that sometimes you got to go with your gut, but I think you got to look at the data too and say, you know what, maybe my thought here isn't correct.
Well, I think you bring up an interesting point, because intuition is yet a different type of bias that we may have. And a lot of times we look to confirm that bias. You know, this is what I've been thinking, and therefore this is what I've seen, and therefore I'm going to do it, and ignore, like you said, the data.
Yeah.
And well, like we just discussed, you know, the data can shift. Now, we did spend a good amount of time talking about paid ads. And you know, you talked about a messaging a second ago. But if you can, give me an understanding of, you know, what a typical breakdown would be. If I'm talking about, you know, omnipresent, mm-hmm. how would I look at, you know, breaking things down? Because I can't go all in. You shouldn't go all in to one particular thing. While I do want to put more emphasis on things that are going to give me a greater ROI, what does it typically look like as far as an overall strategy and approach?
Yeah. Again, Jim, I would say this is going to vary based on each person, right? Or each company, because we utilize, you know, our customer insights report to really figure that piece out, right? But I would say, you know, digital is everywhere now. So on a digital strategy, I'm looking at, in most cases, 60 to 70% of a budget going through digital channels. Now, that doesn't mean all in Meta, by the way, or all in Google, right? But at least 60 to 70% of that budget going there. That varies by industry. Sometimes it's more half and half. And then the rest should be really those traditional methods. The brand awareness plays. There's even, you know, the ground floor events and event marketing, which we also have dabbled in, influencer marketing. And so there's so much outside of digital that we see a huge impact for our clients on. And so I would say it typically leans that 60, 70% digital and then everything else after that. But we've done 50-50. We've said, hey, digital doesn't seem to be the main area for you at all. And so we've gone all in on event-based marketing through experiences, through influencers, just depending on the business.
Okay. So we talked a lot about a lot of different things in regards to certainty and uncertainty and breaking down and looking at that particular mix. But if you were to say that I'm sitting here, I'm a, you know, in a small, medium-sized enterprise, I'm, you know, responsible for sales and marketing types of activities, whether it's marketing operations, sales operations, or I'm doing something. What is one of the things that I need to start thinking about right now, given, you know, what we see, you know, coming?
Yeah, I think if you heard everything we just talked about and you think about your customer and you go, you know, I don't know what their values are. I don't know what drives them to make decisions. I don't know what other things they buy on a regular basis, right? Or what types of services they're looking for their company. That is something that has to change right away. I mean, the days, there's so much data out there, and I'm not being biased here to our data, but there's so many opportunities to understand your customer better through self-reported information, by the way, from these businesses, from these consumers, that if you don't have a data-driven strategy, you are really missing the boat. And so that's number one. Number two for me is really just that cohesiveness. So I'm glad you brought up sales versus marketing, because one thing we see every time is there's usually sort of a gap or friction between the sales team and the marketing team. And if I'm a leader that's responsible for both of those, or even if I'm just on one side or the other, I'm going to go to my counterpart, or I'm going to go to both of my teams and really make sure that they're on the same page. Because when we talk about that data-driven strategy, it doesn't just stop at the marketing. The marketing gets them into the funnel. And then if the sales team that's actually responsible for communicating the, you know, whatever the technology is or whatever the sales, whatever you're selling is, if they're not saying the things that we talked about in the data, if they're not hitting on trust, if they're not hitting on certainty, if they're not hitting on those psychological drivers that we sold in our advertising, we've really spent all this money to get somebody into the funnel that isn't going to convert because we're not following through. So that cohesiveness between marketing and sales is so, so important.
Wow. A whole lot for us to actually chew upon. You also bring up an interesting point at the very end, is I had the opportunity to interview Dr. Oded Netzer from Columbia University, and he talked about this framework for decision-making and using data to actually be able to help us with our decision-making. And he said, we need to create a list of IWICs, and that's W-I-W-I-K-S. Mm-hmm. So a number of IWICs, which is I wish I knew. Create your I wish I knew list.
Yeah.
Start getting those answers today. Brandon McKee, thanks for joining us. How does the B2B DM gang get in touch with you?
Yeah, all you need to do is go on our website. It's winbigmedia.com/undefeated. So short for the Undefeated Marketing System, but winbigmedia.com/undefeated.
Brandon McKee, thank you for sharing your knowledge and wisdom, and we wish you the very best.
Thank you, Jim.
Thank you for joining us. Go now to join the B2B DM gang in the B2B Marketer LinkedIn group, where you can connect with other B2B DM disruptors and get access to our B2B DM cheat sheets, checklist, and guides. Be sure to tune in next week for our next episode. And always remember, you can automate your lead capture, but you must lure your lead.